Chapter 2 Pleasure Island. Progressives have long defended the right of the homeless to camp in public places. In 1983, activists mobilized hundreds of homeless people to march on San Francisco City Hall, shouting, "Don't be a louse, give me a house." A 1989 earthquake forced some 500 people to evacuate their city-subsidized single-resident occupancy hotel rooms, and nearly 200 of them and others camped out at Civic Center Plaza. Nearby residents and businesses complained about their presence. The city's progressive mayor, a former social worker, refused to move the homeless from Civic Center until replacement housing was available 9 months later. By the early 1990s, advocates for the homeless were hosting seminars where they taught people how to camp out in the city. San Francisco voters sometimes demand greater public order. In 2004, the city passed a ballot initiative that banned aggressive and intimidating panhandling, such as near ATM machines or inside buses. In 2010, San Francisco voters approved an ordinance that made it illegal to sit or lie on sidewalks between 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. And in 2016, voters banned camping on sidewalks. Progressive homelessness advocates fought these initiatives. One member of the Coalition on Homelessness compared measures like the ban on people lying and sitting on sidewalks to Jim Crow racial segregation laws in the South. "Sitting is not a crime," was the headline for one advertisement ahead of the election, which showed a picture of African-American activists desegregating a lunch counter in the 1950s. In 2013, some progressive merchants in the Haight allowed the homeless to flout the law and sit on sidewalks. "I'm a vet," said an empowered homeless man drinking beer on the sidewalk. "I'll sit anywhere I want." The homeless know they are supported by progressive elected officials, advocates, and citizens. "This is San Francisco downtown. Anyone has the right to be downtown," another homeless man said. "What you think this is, Palo Alto?" Progressives give homeless people the equipment they need to live on sidewalks. After Occupy Wall Street protests were held in Oakland City Center in 2011, protesters gave their tents to the homeless and money to buy more. 5 years later, a graphic designer in San Francisco purchased and gave away $15,000 worth of camping tents. Other organizations were giving them out as well, noted the city's head of homeless services in 2016. "And now we've got 80 encampments." San Francisco remains significantly more generous in its cash payments to homeless and other spending to serve them than other cities. For example, San Francisco's maximum general assistance cash welfare monthly benefit for the poor is $588, as compared to $449, $221, and $183 for individuals in San Diego, Los Angeles, and New York City, respectively. While New York, Chicago, Phoenix, and San Diego spend 3.5, 1.1, 0.9, and 2.5% of their budget on homelessness services, San Francisco spends 6%. When local, state, and federal funding are accounted for, San Francisco spends $31,985 per homeless person just on housing, not including general assistance, other cash welfare programs like temporary assistance for needy families, and other services. By contrast, New York spends $11,662, and Los Angeles spends $5,001. Even with restrictions on cash welfare payments to some homeless people, San Francisco still gives significantly larger cash benefits to the poor in comparison to other cities. San Francisco gives $709 per capita of total cash welfare payments to the poor, as compared to $195, $120, and 34 cents in New York, Chicago, and Phoenix, respectively. Including overhead, San Francisco spends $15,583 per recipient, where New York spends $7,129 per recipient through its cash welfare program. There is a provision in Care Not Cash that allows recipients to get full payment if they agree to work for a nonprofit homeless service provider. If you identify as homeless, you only get $60 per month plus food stamps because of Care Not Cash, noted Tom Wolf. But if you volunteer at a nonprofit for 12 hours per month, you get full general assistance payment. You collect 3 months before they kick you off and you never volunteered. That's what Tom did. The homelessness nonprofit's whole intention is to keep more people in this cycle, he said, because they're getting money for it. Tom had himself lived as a homeless addict in the Tenderloin, surviving on the city's cash welfare payments. I got $581 a month in general assistance and $192 in food stamps, he said. I could get a free breakfast at Glide Memorial Church and a free lunch at St. Anthony's, which allowed me to use all of my general assistance money for heroin and then sell my food stamp card to a merchant in Chinatown who would pay me 60 cents on the dollar for it. According to a 2019 survey conducted by the homeless advocacy group Tipping Point, just 1/5 of San Francisco's homeless said they were born in the city, and only half had lived in the city for over 10 years. In a different survey, nearly 1/3 of San Francisco's homeless said they were homeless before coming to San Francisco. And among the 70% who said they became homeless after moving to San Francisco, we don't know how long many of them had lived in the city. For some, it could have been as brief as a month, which is the time it takes to become eligible for general assistance. Helping the neediest can create perverse incentives. They love getting in the most fucked up folks out here, complained a homeless man who believed homeless people from out of town were getting into a new and more desirable shelter before him. I'm just not fucked up enough, said one young homeless woman. It's better than being in Oakland. It definitely has more services for homeless people. We have more places where they feed you and help you get into a shelter if you want. When I was first homeless, said a homeless man in the late 1990s, I stayed around the Tenderloin, you know, because that's where the food was, the shelters was. The reputation stuck. In 2019, a homeless man told a reporter that he came from Iowa to San Francisco because he heard social services are plentiful, anyone is welcome, and the weather is pleasant. But the biggest reason many people come to San Francisco is for the cheap and abundant drugs and the lax law enforcement. I didn't want that straight life, said a 32-year-old homeless man from Alabama. I was after the candy, getting high, easy money, freedom, ladies, getting high some more. Some of these small towns, you stick out straight away and they come for you. Someone makes a call and the cops get on your tail. You could be just walking down the road like anyone else, no cart, nothing, and they pick you up, said another. Some of the things allowed to happen in San Francisco would never be permitted back home in Boston. Jackie Berlin is a mother whose son Corey is homeless and addicted to fentanyl and living on the streets of the Bay Area. My son tells me San Francisco is where he most readily gets what he needs. He calls it hell, and compared it to Pleasure Island in the Disney film Pinocchio. On one side of the street are people giving you food and clean needles, Corey told her. On the other side of the street are all the drug dealers. It's like getting all the candy and treats that you think you want. You think you're having fun. But little by little, it's taking away your humanity and turning you into something you were never meant to be, like how the kids start turning into donkeys in Pinocchio and then end up trapped and in cages. We watched the movie when he was a boy, said Jackie, and so it totally made sense to me that he felt like one of the poor donkeys trying to break free, with the drug dealers giving them treats and enslaving them and taking away their humanity, and they had no way to escape. Others agreed. When I asked a major provider of housing for the homeless in the Tenderloin, Randy Shaw, Whether people come to San Francisco for the drugs, he said without hesitation, yes, 100%, no doubt about it. We have the worst overdose rate of any city in the country. Matt Haney, the San Francisco supervisor who represents the Tenderloin, told me, undoubtedly there are some people who come here because they are sick with addiction. This is a place where you can access drugs more easily. In 2016, San Francisco opened a new shelter, which attracted homeless from different neighborhoods within the city, according to University of California, Los Angeles sociologist and homelessness researcher Chris Herring. Unfortunately, after the first few months, it became clear that the Navigation Center, homeless shelter, was not resulting in fewer encampments, wrote Herring, who works closely with the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Instead, the number of camps increased, as did complaints and policing. This was not due to the shelter's failure of meeting the needs of the unhoused, but rather its success in doing so. When people arrive in San Francisco, they often discover there isn't room in the shelters for them. People come from all over the United States thinking it's some sort of spa here, said a homeless man, some sort of nirvana here, and they find out that it's very expensive to live here. The same was true in Los Angeles. For the first time in 13 years, Los Angeles opened its housing voucher waitlist last year, said Dr. Margot Cashel. The city drew 600,000 applicants for 20,000 slots, highlighting the enormous unmet need. And more services attracted more people to Seattle. I do think we have a magnet effect, said Seattle's former homelessness chief. Nearly one quarter of the homeless in King County, in which Seattle is the biggest city, said they became homeless outside of Washington State. Mayor Breed said she opposed Proposition C because she feared that spending yet more on homelessness services without any requirement that people get off the street would backfire. We are a magnet for people who are looking for help, she said. There are a lot of other cities that are not doing their part, and I find that larger cities end up with more than our fair share. After San Francisco started offering free hotel rooms to the homeless during the 2020 coronavirus pandemic, first responders reported that people had come from across the state. People are coming from all over the place. Sacramento, Lake County, Bakersfield, said the city's fire chief. We have also heard that people are getting released from jail in other counties and being told to go to San Francisco, where you will get a tent and then you will get housing. When a television reporter asked Bay Area mayors why there was so much homelessness in Bay Area cities, but not in affluent communities east of the Bay Area, the Berkeley mayor answered, I assume it's the fact that our cities have such robust social services and shelter, as well as just the environment, the climate, a city that is inviting and welcoming to people. A Los Angeles homelessness service provider emphasizes the extent to which the homeless shop around from city to city, seeking the best housing and benefits and avoiding the law. He wrote, "For a majority of people, they move from community to community, looking for food, shelter, and services. Keeping one step beyond the arm of the law or moving from others who might harm them. While some homeless are attracted to San Francisco for housing and services, many of San Francisco's most visible homeless people don't use them. When I visited the Tenderloin with Tom Wolf, he pointed to the doorway to a building. I slept here, he said, because I was such an addict that I didn't want to walk the 5 blocks to the shelter. I wanted to be right near the dealers. In the context of cities with permissive attitudes toward drugs, like San Francisco, many homeless people stay in encampments to use illegal substances more freely and easily than they can in the shelters. Many policymakers understand this. I went out with a team twice to have conversations with people to get an understanding of what they're dealing with, said Mayor Breed in 2020. It was absolutely insane. Most of the people did not take us up on the offer of shelter and services. Even people who would prefer to live in sober environments say they do not want to quit their addictions. When we surveyed people in supportive housing in New York, said University of Pennsylvania homelessness researcher Dennis Culhane, almost everybody wanted their neighbors to be clean and sober, but they didn't want rules from themselves about being clean. In 2016, after the city of San Francisco broke up a massive 350-person homeless encampment, dozens of the homeless refused the city's offers of help. Of the 150 people moved during a single month of homeless encampment cleanups in 2018, just 8 people accepted the city's offer of shelter. In 2004, just 131 people went into permanent supportive housing after 4,950 contacts made by then-Mayor Newsom's homeless outreach teams. Homeless people in Oakland successfully prevented the breakup of their camp in a public park by erecting barricades made of trash and furniture. Unable or unwilling to force the homeless to move, the city granted them a different place to live, where they will be able to camp and co-govern their new land with a local nonprofit. After a major homeless encampment was broken up in 2017, reports of low-level crimes rose throughout the city. Some residents started taking matters into their own hands. In 2019, a group of residents arranged for large boulders to be placed on the sidewalks in front of their homes to prevent camping by homeless people. Another group built a wall to block access to a walking path that had become a homeless encampment. What ends up happening with a lot of progressive liberals in San Francisco, said Tom, is they get to go home to their nice house in Noe Valley and six-figure job and kids in private school. They can afford to vote progressively for social justice because they don't have to walk their kids through the Tenderloin and play hopscotch over the feces and needles. Homelessness advocates often level serious charges at people who disagree with their view of the problem and the solution. In the early 1990s, a Harvard sociologist who wrote a book on homelessness noted, "Those who see the homeless as passive victims of circumstances beyond their control often react to the evidence of service refusal with a mixture of fury and disbelief." Advocates of shelters, said Friedenbach, don't really care about the homeless. There's this thought that shelters are an easy, quick solution and we get people off the streets and the neighbors stop complaining, she said. It really comes from a perspective of, how do we keep the neighbors happy? They don't want to have to look at homeless people anymore, so let's shove them into a shelter so we don't have to look at them. In 2001, the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness wheat-pasted posters of a fake front-page San Francisco Chronicle across town. Just beneath the masthead, a large headline read, "Fuck the homeless," right above a picture of San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown laughing. Below his photo was the headline, "Save the Tourists." Progressives leveled the same charges at people 30 years later. "Because of some of the stuff I say," said a community activist in Seattle's historically black Capitol Hill neighborhood, "people say, oh, she's not for them. But I have a heart for homeless and mentally ill. Most of my family works with the mentally ill." Noted a Chronicle journalist in 2017, "Inevitably, homeless advocates and others will say you're not compassionate in response to stories about homeless encampments. They called me a racist," said Tom. "They accused me, a guy who used to be homeless, of demonizing the homeless because I'm asking for accountability." I found myself similarly accused. In 2019, after I published an article for Forbes about the homeless crisis, a progressive homeless activist accused me on Twitter of having written my article to make money off of a fear tactic, of fueling hatred and even increasing violence against homeless people. After I asked the former San Francisco supervisor for the Tenderloin neighborhood, former mayoral candidate Jane Kim, how such a progressive city ended up with so much suffering, she said, "My concern, Michael, just to be very honest, is that when that kind of messaging goes out, violence against people who are unhoused goes up. I was shocked and horrified by what she seemed to be suggesting. It sounds like you're worried that I'm going to write something that would cause violence against people who live on the street, I said. No, she said. It's just the initial summary of all the misery on the streets of San Francisco is aligned, gets used a lot, and in such a progressive city. I don't think even political consultants are trying to increase violence against those people who are unhoused. I don't think that that's anyone's mission, but it is what happens. But there is no evidence for what Kim claimed. In fact, the number of reported attacks on the homeless declined nationwide between 2008 and 2017 from 106 to 29, according to a study by a homelessness advocacy organization, even as concern over homelessness rose from 38% to 47%. The main perpetrators of violence against the homeless tend to be other homeless people, or drug dealers, according to people who have lived on the streets. There wasn't a day that went by without violence on the street, said Tom about his time living homeless in the Tenderloin. Someone getting in a fight, beat up, shot for drugs. One of the Hondurans, drug dealers, would whip out a machete and chop at a guy's arm because he had used a counterfeit $5 bill. That doesn't get brought up at the community meetings. The only people talking to the Board of Supervisors are Harm Reduction Coalition and homeless advocates who paint this very different picture of the homeless being victimized. They point at the politicians saying, "You're all victimizing them with the sweeps." Said Jackie, whose son Corey compared San Francisco to Pleasure Island, "My son has also been hospitalized twice from being stabbed. One time, he almost died. I didn't even know he was in the hospital until he was well enough to call me. After that, I bought him a medic alert bracelet with my info on it. He eventually lost it, of course. So I planned to have my phone number tattooed on his chest. He agreed, but because of COVID, tattoo parlors are closed. I soon discovered in my research that I was hardly the first person that progressive elected officials and homelessness advocates had accused of fomenting violence against unhoused people. Many others had been criticized for far worse over the years, including San Francisco's highest elected officials. The criticism by progressive homelessness advocates was heavy, political, and personal, wrote former Mayor Willie Brown in his 2008 memoir. People accused me of abandoning the problem when I was working daily to try and get a solution going. It was brutal. I had become demonized, and my own efforts belittled. It is notable that the result of such personal attacks is to frighten off people seeking to change and perhaps improve the situation. The problem of homelessness, concluded Mayor Brown within 9 months of entering office, may not be solvable.